Thank God it's Free Range. You are listening to Free Range Radio Friday with your host, Michael Elves. Pour yourself a beverage and turn up the volume, because here on 101.5 UMFM, the weekend starts now.
101.5 UMFM. This is Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. I'm Michael Loves, and kicking things off for us tonight, new single from Art Test that's Walked Off Into the Distance. We have got a great show for you tonight. All sorts of new music. Holy crow. Tons and tons of new music. Some of my favorite bands and artists released new records this week. Alice Russell back. First record in 10 years. New Krongbin as well. We'll get into that. And then a little later, coming up around 7 p.m., Seth Nana, the drummer for the band Ghost Trees. Their album is out next Friday. Unfortunately, in my interview that I taped with him, I did say that it was out today. It's Bandcamp Friday, though. You can pre-order it. The new album is called Intercept Method. Go support some artists if you've got the scratch to do so. But we'll get into the talk about recording Intercept Method around 7 p.m. Before that, though, Beatox. We've had him on the show in the past. He's got a new single called Been a Long Time. He's going to be coming to the Winnipeg Jazz Festival, and we'll get him on in advance of that. And like I said, we got new Alice Russell, and we got some new Steffi Zissling. We'll keep it moving here on 101.5 UMFM.
I've been feeling way down. I know that it's been a hard day, but you can still grow even in a dark place. And I know that it's been a hard day, but we can still glow even in the dark. Yeah, it's been a long time. I had to hit the road, see how far that I could go. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, it's been a long time. Hold up, be reminded. When things do get tough, I know we seem all blinded. With a little meditation, realigning. Guarantee you find it. Come on, get behind it. Hold up, be reminded. When things do get tough, I know we seem all blinded. With a little meditation, realigning. Guarantee you find it. Come on, get behind it. Yeah, it's been a long time. I had to hit the road, see how far that I could go. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, it's been a long time. It's been a long time. I had to hit the road, see how far that I could go. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, it's been a hold up, be reminded. When things do get tough, I know we seem all blinded. With a little meditation, realigning. Guarantee you find it. Come on, get behind it. Hold up, be reminded. When things do get tough, I know we seem all blinded. With a little meditation, realigning. Guarantee you find it. Come on, get behind it. I know that it's been a hard day, but you can still grow even in a dark place. And I know that it's been a hard day, but we can still glow even in the dark. Yeah, it's been a long time. I had to hit the road, see how far that I could go. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, it's been a long time. I had to hit the road, see how far that I could go. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, it's been a long time. I had to hit the road, see how far that I could go. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, it's been a long time. Thank you.
Something new from Steffi Ziesling, a track called Brothers. Before that, Alice Russell, I Am, the title track to her first record in a decade on True Thoughts, out today. B-Talk started that set off. Before we get to my interview with Seth Nana coming up at 7, Lana Winterhalter was on the show recently. Tomorrow night is the album release party. It's the variety show that we talked about at the Handsome Daughter. I'm going to play you the title track. It's called Recovering Theater Kid. Keep it locked here on 101.5 UMFM.
Each night I fall asleep and I wake up in the wings. I've forgotten all my lines or I've forgotten how to sing. I'm 20 minutes late or I just can't find the door. The clothes that I'm wearing don't fit me anymore. The voices in my head are getting loud. Oh, I try to find your eyes amongst the crowd. Oh, I've always been a little bit dramatic. I just hope you're okay with it. I'm standing center stage, but the spotlight pointing left, there's only darkness for my sequins to reflect. No kisses from my mom or dad, no flowers at my door. Who will I be if I don't want to stand on this stage anymore?
We played some tracks off of previous releases here when we were promoting some Bandcamp Fridays. It's another Bandcamp Friday, and I'm joined by Seth Nana from Ghost Trees, their new record, Intercept Method, out now, and I'm really excited to get a chance to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I definitely discovered you guys during one of those like COVID-era internet deep dives, and came across your music and loved what I heard on Bandcamp. I'm wondering if you can kind of tell folks a little bit about kind of the group and how, because a drum and sax duo is kind of an unusual thing.
Yep.
In
yep.
Jazz. How did you and Brent start, and like, did you just immediately decide on like, this is the combination that you guys were going to do, or did you ever seek out other players?
No, it started off as a trio in the early 2000s in Brooklyn, and that was a band called the Eastern Seaboard. So it was me, Brent, and a bass player, a stand-up bass player. We did that for a long time, about 10 years, two records on Black Saint, a bunch of self-released things, toured the United States extensively. And then, you know, it was about the time I was living in California going to school, Brent was out here, and the bass player was in New Mexico. Every time we got together to tour, it was like, you know, hemorrhaging money a little bit, and you know, you really had to love it to continue. And our bass player, unfortunately for us, got real popular as a painter and decided to go down that route. But me and Brent didn't want to stop playing it, and we were just like, man, let's just keep going as a duo, because we were, you know, we've been making music for so long and we didn't want to stop doing the band. So we just changed the name from the Eastern Seaboard to Ghost Trees, a name we came up with one night in the garage. When we both said it together, we both looked at each other and were like, oh, that's the name. So we always say, you know, when we're playing, I always tell Brent, and he tells me sort of the same thing. When I'm playing the drums, I'm sort of like playing the drums and the bass together in my head. And Brent is sort of playing the piano, you know, the piano parts and the saxophone in his head. So to us, the songs are like fully orchestrated. Now to the listener, it might just sound like drums and sax, but we're always thinking when we write songs about almost making it sound like a full group, which sounds weird unless you're actually stuck trying to make music with just two people. You want to make it larger than life.
Right. So compositionally, then you're hearing something beyond what you're putting down on paper or, you know, recording.
Well, I think Brent writes a lot of stuff on piano first, and then he brings it to saxophone. And then, you know, it's my job for him to play it. So we never just think, let's play this the way a saxophone and a drum would sound. We just like, we don't ever say to ourselves, let's just make Interstellar Space Part 2. Like, it's never been our MO. We've always wanted to make, you know, nice melodic stuff, good intros, good outros, togetherness. You know, I think Brent in his head writes for orchestra half the time, you know, and sometimes I could see he gets a little frustrated with the final result. He's always like, well, I hear it differently in my head. And I sort of think that same way, you know, like every time I listen back to it on recorded vinyl, I'm like, oh, I always imagined it being different, you know? So it's kind of strange the way we think about it versus the way it comes out. But I think we both think about it in much larger terms than just saxophone and drums.
Now, is that a translation between, like, in your heads to the recorded output, or like when you're working on a song and jamming it out, is there even a like gap there?
Oh, I don't know. You know, me and Brent we're both the same in the respect that, like, we'll, you know, this record that we just put out, we've listened back to it once or twice when we've had to choose songs and with recordings and with my own music. And I think Brent is the same way. I'll probably listen to a record I recorded 5 years ago once or twice. And I'll probably listen to this record again for pleasure or for my own surprise, probably a couple of years from now, but I'm not going to listen to it anytime soon. I just can't. I'm my own worst critic, and I can't even listen to it without critiquing my drums, which is terrible. But, you know, and we made it, and I was there, and I remember when we recorded it, I did my best. You know, when we were done recording, I was like, oh, man, that's the best I'll ever play these songs. So I was pretty happy with it. But I never like to listen back to my own stuff and judge it on that way. So when we're writing songs, it's a little bit different. You know, Brent just comes in with this stuff, and then each song kind of has its own, in my mind, and sort of probably in Brent's mind, each mind has its own character, you know? I mean, each song has its own, like, character in my mind. So it's like, you know, if we're going to use mallets or wires or just regular sticks, how I can remember the song is how I remember to play them over and over, so we can, you know, play it with a lot of continuity, be like, oh, this is the song where I play, you know, sort of slow here, fast here, and then I'll use, you know, other drummers to say it. So I'll be like, oh, this is the Elvin Jones part, this is the Tony Williams part, this is the, you know, Pete LaRocca part. And that's kind of how I envision these songs. Never just like, oh, it's just drums and bass. Brent's going to play this song on the saxophone, I'm just going to, you know, play the drums behind it, and, you know, and it'll be different every time. We kind of, it's really, really a lot more orchestration than it is anything else.
You mentioned you were going to school when you guys started. Were you studying drumming at the time?
No. Okay. I don't read music. I've never taken a lesson. I grew up a punk rock bass player into an indie rock drummer into a jazz drummer, and just play by studying records, listening to records intently, and working on my own efforts. Brent took lessons in New York for a couple of years, but he was new to the saxophone when I met him. He was an alto player when I met him, and then he was switching into Barry, and I was like, no, dude, you have to play tenor. So, but he didn't go to music school either. I went to school for nursing, and Brent is now a teacher.
Gotcha.
But when I met him, he was working, you know, just some, he was working at like Pfizer doing administrative work or something weird like that, like filing cabinet filer at Pfizer. So neither one of us went to music school. And it's funny to read that in interviews and people are like, oh, these guys are just so well, it's obvious these guys are super talented and, you know, very versed in music. And it's nothing could be farther from the truth. Brendan's, you know, can read music, but I cannot. I don't even sometimes know what people are talking about when they say things, you know, fucking basic, simple musical terms. I'm just like, I don't know what you're talking about. I just love music and been playing my whole life. I don't know how to describe it any other way.
And I would say you're an attentive listener, because if you're talking about like LaRocca or Jones or like contrasting styles and things that you're kind of picking up on when you're considering, you know, the parts you're playing, that you've at least listened to other drummers and able to parse kind of like what they do or what it is that they do that you want to do.
Yes. Hours of intense, you know, study, that probably more intense studying and focus than, you know, maybe people can get out of college. So much so that it drove me nuts, and I had to step away for a little bit. You know, I go at it heavily and then need to take a little break. I picked up surfing there for a little while and keep my mind away from just obsessing about drums. And now that I've moved here to Carolina, I've just been, you know, have this day job as a nurse, and I'm, you know, a family man now. I got married, I got a kid, and it's just like, I just got to at least, you know, 1 or 2 hours a day, I'll have to find a way to think about drums and obsess about it from the littlest details of foot pedal, you know, felts for foot pedals or drumstick sizes or whatever. I'm just obsessed to the point of almost ridiculousness. You know, I don't think there's anybody in the world that knows anything more about a cymbal than I do. I must be the world's most famous cymbal enthusiast.
Sure enough. Did you take your own drums with you to Van Gelder Studio, or were there drums there?
Oh, no. They have drums there. They have a pretty much the same kit I have, but I brought my kit. I mean, my kit is a, you know, a Gretsch, custom-made Gretsch bop kit, you know, same one that Elvin and Tony and all and Art Blakey played. And I bought it 10 years ago. It cost thousands of dollars. It's real nice. You know, it's like the quintessential sound that those guys have. This thing flows through it. And, you know, if I'm going to go record for my life, I'm going to bring my nice drum set. But they have a Gretsch bop kit there that appears to be from the 60s. It's blue, sparkly. They got it tuned up real high. I saw it in the corner when I was there, but no, I use my own stuff there. I use my own drums.
It's a historic studio. I mean, was there a particular record or something that about that space that led you guys there?
I mean, it's Van Gelder Studio, every record, you know what I mean? Every record ever recorded there. We, you know, me and Brent are, you know, we're jazz enthusiasts. So it's a funny story. We were just looking it up. I was like, man, it would just be so, you know, it would have been cool just to record there. You know, we're thinking of some place to record because our friend Chris, he owns a recording studio here, and we've done most of our stuff here. We have, you know, he's like a block away from our house, and he's a real sweet guy, friend of Brent's forever. And his studio sounds good. It's got great microphones, great room, everything. But we just kind of want to branch out a little bit. And then we were like, I wonder if it's like Van Gelder Studios open. And then we kind of looked it up and we sort of saw that it was, and then Brent sent an email. I was like, can we record there? And Maureen's like, yeah, sure. And we were just like, what the, you know, yeah, okay. So we, you know, I didn't know, I wouldn't for the life of me ever imagine it was still open, but it is. And when you go in there, it is everything you would think it would be times 1 million. I mean, I've never seen a place like that. I've never seen a structure like that. You can stand in the middle of it, clap your hands, and it seems like the sound will float around your head for like 5 seconds. It's just I've never seen its architectural equal, you know. And you walk in there and you could just, I mean, it just feels like the history of jazz in there. It's real humbling and real intimidating. At first, the second time we went, it wasn't so intimidating, but it was a little intimidating the first time I was there.
So then getting comfortable in that space and doing what you guys do, like, did you have to adjust psychologically at all to like make this record versus the previous records?
No. I mean, this one in particular, we were a little bit more comfortable. You know, we had to meet Maureen for the first time years ago. And, you know, we never met her. Just time we knew her, you know, we knew where to park. We knew, you know, what to expect. The first one time we recorded there a couple years ago, I recorded in a drum booth, much to my dismay. You know, I didn't want to do that, but that's how it was done. And then when we were coming around for this latest record, Brenda said, met that up. We were like, before we came, I was like, Maureen, we have to be in the room together. I want to put my drums, you know, in the studio itself, and Brent be, you know, 5-10 feet away from me so I can see him and hear him. So I feel like this process was much more us, you know, because we're not the kind of people that like put headphones on and put a drummer in a booth. It was that part was strange, but we made it work, and it wasn't so strange after all, because I was behind a booth, but Brent was literally like 5 feet in front of me, even though the booth was between us. It was almost like he was just standing there. So it wasn't so bad. And Maureen, you know, she's a genius. She knows what she's doing. So
sure enough. So the album, as you said, is Intercept Method. There's a track on the record called Intercept Method. How do you choose, you know, like a title track, or like what makes a song a title track?
Well, that's interesting. You know, Brent usually names most of the songs, whether, you know, the concepts are caught or thought up by him or myself. Most of the time, Brent is just going to introduce like this piece of music. And he's, you know, he's an English major. He reads 1,000 books a day. This guy's like, you know, super well read, and me, maybe not so much. So Brent always comes up with these fantastic names. And every, you know, record that we do, the, you know, the title track will be on one of the things, and it just seems right to do that. You know what I mean? And Intercept Method is just two really cool words put together. The minute I saw that, I was like, oh, that, I think we both agreed like, at the same time, like immediately, like, oh, that could be the name of the record. You know, like we just came up with that kind of organically. When we think about the name of the record, we're like, well, there's the name right there. And that's usually the way it works, is like, you know, we'll just see the name on the board and be like, well, why don't we just name the record that? That's pretty much how it came to be.
So this album is a double LP. It's a bigger record, a little more sprawling. Was that an intentional thing? Like,
yeah. You know, we were just like going at it for so long, and we're like, we've got, you know, when the pandemic hit, it was like, we've got time. You know, we've got time. We're gonna have we kind of figured we'd be have a lot of time on our hands, and I was like, let's just, what's the most, you know, epic thing we could do with our time? And like, let's make a double LP. We're always just making eight songs on an LP. I was like, let's just do a double LP. Let's throw it all in there. Let's put it out there, and then get a publicity firm to help us with it this time. Like, let's just throw all our chips on the table and see where it goes, you know, as opposed to just doing so much DIY work ourselves. And, you know, and we knew it was going to be expensive to do a double LP. It is super expensive. And I was like, it doesn't matter. Like, I just want to try it once. I want to have this glorious product, because I don't want to have the COVID years be so wasted, you know? So that's why we did it, just to like, you know, because COVID kind of forced our hands to think large. And you know, me and Brent have never stopped in 20 years playing together or touring. This is like the first time since I'm 20 years old during the pandemic, between 2021 and 2023, that I didn't tour the United States or abroad or something like that. It was very strange. Like, I've been on the road at least 2 or 3 times a year since I'm 20 years old. So it was very hard for me to want to try to find a way to stay productive, and Brent too. And then we were just like, let's just do it. Let's just go big, do a double OP.
Sure enough. And you enlisted an artist to do the front cover. Like, it's kind of a change from the black and white photography.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I appreciate that you kept the back of the LP design, yeah, the standard.
Yeah, me and Brenner, we're like that. I think every record we do that we're putting out by ourselves is going to have that back to it. And then the first three records are in black and white. That was kind of a concept that we thought about. And then we decided that, like, you know, wouldn't it just be great one day, you know, 50 years from now, people like going to record hunt. And they're like, oh, I got to get the, you know, this one and this one and this one. But they're all kind of like, you know, the same, like the continuity is the same, and black and white photography is timeless, and the black and white back seems timeless. We were going to do everything on clear vinyl, and Brent kind of conned me into doing colored vinyl now. So yeah. So the new chapter is colored vinyl and doing some cool graphic design. Our friend Pete Hurdle did it. He's a genius, and I kind of like it. You know, I don't think we're ever going to go back to the black and white.
It looks great, and it ties in nicely with the color of the colored vinyl too. So there's,
it really does.
Yeah,
it really does. That's mostly Brent. His brain thinks like that, you know. Brent's brain thinks exactly like that. That's how this came to be. I would have kept the clear vinyl, because I'm just a black and white, you know, kind of person. But Brent, to his credit, came up with all these fun ideas. It was his idea to, you know, do this red, black, white concept in red vinyl. So it looks great.
I get it. Though we're sitting here, we're recording this on Zoom. I can see your T-shirt's black and white. My T-shirt's black and white. I feel you.
Yeah, I'm all black and white all the time.
Seth, before I let you go, I want to get you to pick a track off of Intercept Method we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking that one in particular, or an anecdote about it, something you can share, I'd love to hear it.
What would be the, you know, it depends on your timeline. I think Carnation.
We got time.
Is,
play what pick. Don't worry about the length.
Yeah, I think Carnation is probably the one song that we had before we thought to do a double. Like, this song was around when we were in Japan touring, and we kind of played it through, and it's kind of like our swan, like our, the one that would encompass everything that we did, is all in there. You know, it's our Coltrane vibe, our our real quiet ECM vibe in the beginning. You know, it's really the one that would express Ghost Tree so much. And then second one I would say is Blind Mars. Either one of those two is kind of like our swan song. But I think if I was to introduce anybody to our band, I think Carnation, just the first one would be the best one.
It's the lead off track. And I was going to ask, like, in terms of the purpose behind choosing that, is that because it represents everything?
Yes, exactly. It was sort of my idea. I was like, Brent, we got to hit them hard because, you know, you're talking a limited audience and you just don't want to scare people away. You know, you don't want, people want to get past track one. I know it's 7 minutes long, but I feel like it's a lot of easy listening, and then it, you know, gets a little rough at the end. But it's to me and Brent, it was the best. It was that's just always kind of been our A+ song. That's always been our number one, you know, thought process there. Everything kind of stems from Carnation. Everything that we did stems from Carnation, because Carnation was our first foray into like trying to play more together and jazz like, as opposed to so much free jazz. You know, we were basically, before some of these records, you know, we're just really, really loose, really loose. Always with intent, but loose. And this one, we're like, we can tighten this up and swing it out even more. Everything we do since I've met Brent, we've tried to swing. Now, whether I can swing or not, that's a different story. But Carnation, I feel like, swings with as much skill level as I could have mustered at the time. And I'm very content with the way it turned out.
So your second choice, Limar, is there. It's in the heart of the album, right? Six, you know, yes. Right in the middle of the record.
Yeah.
How much thought, like, did you have to give a different concept to the fact that, like, usually with a side A, side B, there's kind of like the natural, like, kind of finish to the first side, flip it. But you got two instances of that. How much thought did you have to give of, like, where things went?
A ton of thought. The way we have it written, you know, we have this board in practice with the songs, and Brent is like, I mean, only Brent would know this because he wrote, you know, the meat of it. He's just like, this song is the companion piece to, you know, to this song. And I'm like, if you insist. And then we were like, you know, coming up with the order for everything. And I was like, I like the way it flows. We wanted it to be like, you know, if you're going to listen to it on Spotify, I want you to hear how we intended, you know, the flow. So we practiced it in this way. You know, we practiced Carnation, Station Keeping Spherical. We practiced, you know, Leaving to be the seventh song we would practice in the day. Like we intentionally, the way the 12 are presented is basically the way we feel like these songs flow in an order. And we would switch a couple around every once in a while. And, you know, I think, I can't remember which ones are which, because when Brent explains it, it just seems, he's like, yeah, these are companion pieces. And I'm like, are they? It's okay to think that way, I guess. So I think like Spherical and Amplitude are companion pieces, you know, and then like, Limar's, maybe Meanwhile Jet, things like that. They're just companion pieces to each other, according to Brent. To me, they sound like completely different songs, but the way Brent is telling it is like, oh, it's like a story. And this is the beginning of the story, Limar's would be the beginning of the story, and then Meanwhile Jester would be the end of the story. And I'm like, okay. So it's very well thought out the way he wanted to do it. He was very intent on recording them in that order and then presenting them in that order.
Intercept Method, heavy on the method then.
Heavy on the method. Oh yeah, that's what people don't know. People think we're up there winging it, but we practice, you know, a couple hours twice a week, and most of the thoughts of this record is completely pre-planned. Now, whether we execute it to sound like that, that's just jazz. But there's the adventure in the middle, but the beginning and the ending of every one of these songs is very, very calculated. And both of us can tell when one of us isn't hitting it right, isn't hitting the mark right. And we're not afraid to tell each other, hey, you know, the basis of Ghost Trees is the head and the ending, you know, getting those right. The middle part, I mean, that's, you know, we're just good at that, but you got to get the beginning and the ending right, so people know that you practiced.
Well, get your copy of the album at ghost-trees.bandcamp.com. Intercept Method. Seth, thanks for taking some time to talk about it, and congratulations on the release of the new record.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Back here on Thank God It's Free Range, Friday edition of Free Range Radio, right before the break, Carnation, Seth's pick from Intercept Method. And a reminder that you can get Ghost Tree's album on Bandcamp. It is Bandcamp Friday currently. And more money goes into the pockets of the artists and labels directly as Bandcamp waives its cut once a month. New album from Eric Schnow Trio coming out next month, but we got it in our hands thanks to Constellation Records a little early. So I'm going to play you Simply Fly, one of my favorite tracks off of Delights of My Life. Krongbin, as I mentioned off the top of the show, new album out today on Dead Oceans called Ala Sala. Going to play you something from that. We've got a remix of Dina Ogun off of Orion, one of my favorite records of the year so far, but boy, there's a couple new records in contention for sure. And we'll squeeze in a couple more tracks before we hand things over to Kai and After Eight Radio. Keep it locked here on Thank God It's Free Range.
Stand lost. Thank you. Mauvais la vie, gagou nan vente miséréré. Pays a pas bon nous la moitié. Nan compte cadavre sinistré, nous pas jamais chômé. Combo les sou yon kawo. Pays a mette nan won. Chaque jour pou kol son jour malè. Mais nous pas suspend danser. Oh 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 oh.
La musique ne s'arrête pas.
Serré collé, même quand ça va mal. Dans nos douleurs et nos malheurs, un petit air chanté en cœur, ça nous apporte du bonheur.
Que c'est magique.
Me demandez pas de vous expliquer, c'est pas un truc mathématique ou une de vos histoires informatiques.
C'est juste mystique.
Bon milieu de nos déboires, la musique ne s'arrête pas.
C'est rose, on nous pas casser. Même si une bite nous pas tomber, pour clone un jeune pas fait suspens chanter dans CA. Haïti c'est pays musique, pays bambou, pays tambour. Antonio pap kawete ça.
Haïti c'est pays musique, pays bambou, pays tambour, and then you